everyone, welcome back to another episode of On The Mix. I'm your host, Lindsay, and today I thought I would talk to you guys about the beginning stories of the band Primus. Primus is kind of a band that I've been aware of, but I kind of maybe passed over them just because their music is so eclectic. Like, they're really, really different. They're a bit prog, they're a bit funk metal, they're a bit heavy metal. They don't really have a specific kind of genre. They're kind of in the middle, but if anything, I'd say they're a bit like funk metal. But there's actually a pretty interesting connection to this episode and the episode I did last week where I talked about Metallica, because there's a Metallica tie in this episode. So sit back, relax, enjoy, and let me tell you guys about the humble beginnings and the story of the band Primus. So I'm sure maybe some of you have heard the band Primus. Les Claypool, he is the very eclectic singer and very amazing bass player of Primus. He is kind of the main focal point of this episode alongside the other members of the band, but Les Claypool is kind of the focal point for all of it. Probably because he is very unique with his voice, how he sings in a very funny, like nonchalant, very not serious way. Like, it's almost like comedy, but also at the same time, his bass playing is on a whole other level. He created his very eclectic, very unique, very different sounding bass playing from the one and only Kirk Hammett of Metallica. Yes, that is true. Les Claypool was raised in El Sobrante, California, which was a working class suburb. I'm sure maybe it still is, but who knows? Back in the 80s and the 70s, it was a working class suburb in California. He grew up with the likes of junkies, fishermen, loiters, friends from high school, and a very unique mix, a very diverse mix of a lot of different personalities. So these kinds of people would be the direct inspiration for some of his Primus songs that he would write in the future. So how did he meet Kirk Hammett? Well, he shared an algebra class with Kirk in high school, and he would ask Kirk to share his guitar magazines with him because he was very interested in playing the guitar. But he would also ask Kirk to give him a bit of weed because he was also in with the Devil's Lettuce. So he was a massive fan of that. So him and Kirk got on like two peas in a pod. Les has to say this about Kirk Hammett back in the day. He says, "I think a lot of people didn't even realize they went to school with a guitar player from Metallica because he was a very unassuming person. He's like, man, I know the three key elements to success, man. Drugs, sex, and rock and roll." He was like Tommy Chong. He was not in Metallica at this time, but reflecting back on it, yeah, that was Kirk Hammett of Metallica. But at this time, he was in a completely different band, just hanging out doing his own thing. So Kirk and Les Claypool, they became very good friends. Kirk ended up giving Les a Jimi Hendrix cassette and inviting him to sing for his band at the time called Exodus. So again, this was before he was in Metallica. But Les was way too shy to sing in front of anybody at the time. But he bought a bass guitar on the advice of Kirk Hammett, and he also took rhythm advice on how to play the bass guitar. So very specific ways of playing the bass in a very rhythmic style. Kind of like, okay, this might be really weird to say, but roll with me here for a minute. I kind of feel like Primus has a bit of like a funk R&B style. Like, R&B is rhythm and blues, which I think is the foundation for a lot of genres, but it's the rhythm aspect that makes it groovy. It reminds me a lot of like Rage Against the Machine. In some ways, System of a Down has that kind of style. So Korn in some aspects, depending on the songs. It's very groovy, groove metal, but I think it is called funk metal. But that is kind of what we're talking about here, which at this time in the early 80s was kind of unheard of before. So for Les Claypool, he was kind of the, I would dub him as the godfather of this kind of style, especially for bass guitar, because how many bass players can you really say at this point in time really set the precedent for how to play the bass guitar in a really interesting way that's very rhythmic and really fast and prog-like? That's very different. I don't know of anybody else except for Les Claypool, to be honest. Les Claypool reflected back on his time with Kirk Hammett in this moment, and he says this. He's like, "Yeah, Claypool, man, I know the secret, man. You gotta tap your foot. You gotta tap your foot." And I always thought of that. And to this day, I continue to do that. I feel like I have a pretty good sense of rhythm and pocket and groove because I incorporate a portion of my body all the time when I'm playing. Plus, I was second best dancer in my high school yearbook. See, Les Claypool just doesn't take anything seriously. I think that's why Primus is so interesting, because Primus is a really kind of like hip, funny, comedic type of band, but their grooves are very serious. Like, if you've never heard of Primus before, don't get it twisted. Primus is a very hardcore band. They're not everybody's cup of tea, let's just say that, but a lot of their very popular songs, I think most people would enjoy, at least for the sentiment of it's very catchy. So see, it's the groove, it's the rhythm and blues about it all. Like, again, it's the basis for a lot of genres. And so Les Claypool really, really, really took inspiration from what Kirk Hammett was doing and showing him. And I think that really instilled a lot of what we see in Primus, having that influence of that like Metallica hard rocking style. R&B comes into play as well, and their story too, because after high school, Les would fill in for a prog metal band called Blind Illusion, and he also played bass for a local R&B cover band. He was all about the rhythm and blues, he was all about the groove, he was all about that, and it makes sense as to why he would have that very interesting, unique style that separates him from the rest, because he takes his inspiration from, I think, a lot of different genres. That just sets them apart from everybody else, really. Les would end up forming the beginning stages of Primus, but they were not called Primus. They originally were called Primate, and this happened in 1984 after he moved to Berkeley. He had no awareness of the newfound thrash metal sound that was becoming popular in the Bay Area at this time. Primus was so different from what was being heard at the time, and the band would find themselves in underground alternative clubs after New Wave had phased out. So, you know, New Wave was the massive genre of the 80s that was super big, like the synthesizers, the electronics of it all. And that is definitely not what Primus is all about. Les was inspired by the likes of Peter Gabriel, Public Image Limited, which is a band that Sex Pistols member Johnny Rotten formed after the Sex Pistols disbanded. And he was inspired by guitarist Fred Filth. So the ties to Metallica just don't stop with the fact that he knew Kirk Hammett from high school. Mm-mm. Les Claypool would actually end up finding his way into auditioning for the band in 1986, because Primate, which would end up being Primus at the time, was not really that serious. They weren't really doing anything at this time. So Les was trying to find his groove. He had heard that Metallica was doing very well for themselves, and he thought, why don't I give a ring up to Kirk Hammett? So Metallica was looking for a bass player because, in a very tragic accident, their bass player Cliff Burton actually died horrifically. It's really extremely tragic. So the story of how Cliff Burton passed away was Metallica was in Sweden on the Damage Incorporated tour in support of Master of Puppets. Metallica had complained that the bunks on their tour bus were very uncomfortable. So how this story kind of unfolded is a bit diverse between the members of the band. They all kind of have their different stories of how it happened. But essentially, Kirk Hammett and Cliff Burton were telling each other, I want to sleep in your bunk. I want to sleep in yours. And so they either picked a card from a deck of cards, or they drew straws. So the longest straw won their choice of bunk, slash the one that picked up the better card. In Kirk Hammett's version of events, he says that Cliff Burton picked up the Ace of Spades, which got him the first choice of bunk. And in Lars Ulrich's version of events, Kirk drew the short straw, Cliff drew the long straw. That means Cliff won choice of bunk yet again. So we aren't entirely sure of which story is the definitive story, but regardless, it boils down to Cliff won whichever event this was, and he won choice of bunk, which would end up being the thing that killed him. Shortly before 7 a.m. on September 27th, according to the bus driver, Cliff was sleeping when the bus skidded off the road and flipped onto the grass with no safety restraints from the bunks, of course, because you're just in bed. You don't have a seatbelt on, you don't have anything on. He was thrown violently through the window of the bus. So he was thrown from the bus, and then at which point the bus fell on top of him, killing him instantly. That must have happened in about 2 seconds. Like, you get thrown from the window and then the bus falls on top of you. That's crazy. Literally nothing could have prevented his death, aside from something that we thought as the story goes on here. Cliff was 24 years old when he died, tragically, by the way. What caused the bus to skid? Well, the bus driver that was driving at the time said that the crash was caused because the bus hit a patch of black ice. But James Hetfield later said he first believed the bus flipped over because the driver was drunk. He also stated that James Hetfield himself, he walked long ways down each side of the road looking for black ice to be like, okay, this is the culprit. We can definitively say it was black ice. And he could find no patch of black ice on the road. A freelance photographer who was there at the crash scene the following morning also could attest later in an interview about the likelihood of black ice causing the accident. And he says this. He says, it was out of the question because the road was dry and the temperature was around 36 Fahrenheit, which is above the freezing point of 32 degrees Fahrenheit. So it wasn't cold enough for black ice to have formed on the road. So not only could James Hetfield confirm this, not only was the freelance photographer who was there confirming this, but police, who also arrived at the scene, also confirmed that they found no source of black ice on the road. I know that this is taking a bit of a detour from Primus, but I just thought this was so fascinating of how this all ended up for Cliff Burton. This could have been a whole entire episode on its own. I just thought this was really interesting. So basically how it ended, you know, the driver was determined not at fault for the accident and no charges were brought against him, which I think is very negligent because seemingly enough, though, if there was no sign of black ice, then the driver either fell asleep at the wheel or, according to James Hetfield, he was driving drunk. So regardless, either way, that was extremely negligent. If the driver was unable to drive them for some reason, whatever that might have been, I think he should have had the wherewithal to be like, you know what, guys, let's just stay at a hotel for tonight. I can't drive you guys, you know, or I'm going to get another bus driver to come in and fill my place. Metallica was down a bass player. And this is where Les Claypool kind of comes in. You know, he fell in quite nicely with Metallica. Of course, he was great friends with Metallica. So they were looking for a new bass player sometime after they mourned the death properly of Cliff. Well, Kirk Hammett gives Les a tape of Ride the Lightning. And Les would say that he would listen to this tape in the shower as a way to wake up before he attended his day job as a carpenter, just to hype himself up, you know? But he said that he soon knew that he was not going to be in Metallica. His version of events as to why this didn't happen was essentially they liked him, they were all cool with each other, but he was a bit different. Like, he just didn't fit the vibe, essentially. He said that he showed up in, like, a skater mohawk type situation going on. He said he had, like, two different colored tennis shoes on. So, you know, I think Les Claypool being in Metallica was not the move. Imagine if Les Claypool had been in Metallica. The universe would have looked a lot different. I just thought that was really interesting. Like, the really strong Metallica links here in the Primus story. I like that. I really do. But you know what? That had to happen that way because now we have Primus. So he got really serious with his band Primate, which eventually at some point did turn into Primus. In 1989, Primus had built up a following through playing a lot of shows around the local joints and pubs and clubs in the area. And they also played on the local radio. So their songs that they didn't have a lot of, they mostly had live stuff that they were going to put out there. And whenever they could just get gigs and they would play on the radio. So that's kind of how they built a following. Word of mouth, essentially, is how it would happen. Similar funk bands at the time, like Fishbone and Red Hot Chili Peppers, was very much so in demand at this time. And that makes sense, you know. We're shifting now into the 90s. So that sort of kind of rock funk type of metal music was very popular. So and Red Hot Chili Peppers was at the top of their game. They were the top of most of the pop of most. And so I think Primus coming in there to kind of also fit the bill was very, very important at this time because Primus probably couldn't have had their start and their famous start back in the day. It had to kind of be at this time now as they merge into the 90s. So Primus fit the bill for what people were looking for and what people were looking to listen to. So the players for Primus, Les Claypool, bass and vocal. guitarist Lair Lalonde, and drummer Tim Alexander. So those members are Primus as we know it as of this time. And again, they did not have original material just yet. They were mostly doing cover songs of Rush songs. But, you know, Rush is, I think, the touchstone for progressive rock music. Maybe aside from like Jethro Tull, I would kind of consider Jethro Tull to kind of fall under the same kind of spectrum. And actually, I would kind of consider Jethro Tull kind of in similar-ish veins to Primus. But Les Claypool and Lair Lalonde really liked Rush a lot. They were really inspired by Rush. Their first concerts were Rush shows. And of course, Tim, he said that his life had changed when he heard Neil Peart playing The Spirit of the Radio. You know how in the intro to The Spirit of the Radio, it's that like really amazing drum fill. Yeah, that changed his life. And when I heard that, that reminded me of that show Freaks and Geeks with Jason Segel's character, who's a drummer in the show, and he's a massive Neil Peart fan that just for some reason like reminded me of that. I don't know. So Primus, they had their first recording together, which was a 1989 live album called Suck on This. And that starts with a cover of Rush's song YYZ. And if you are a Guitar Hero fan or a Rush fan, you know that song. It is amazing. So that was their first record that they did. The initial pressing of that was only 1,000 records, and it was funded by a loan from Les's father, which is crazy. Like, only 1,000 copies, but apparently it went swimmingly for them, because after they repaid his father, the band used the profits to fund further pressings of the same album, and then they later were able to sign a deal with Rough Trade Records for a nationwide distribution, not just for the really small indie towns in California and the local area, but like now it's completely all the way across the country. And this live album went down swimmingly with the fans. They ate it up. They were amazed. They loved it, right? And they had amassed even more fans. So they had their official 1990 debut album called Fizzle Fry, and that had even more success. It was also a self-funded project because the profits that they made from their live album, they used to fund their debut album. So this went swimmingly for them. They really propelled High Key very fast into the Billboard Hot 100, on MTV, everywhere. The band spent the year touring North America and Europe in support of bands such as 24/7 Spies, The Pixies, and Jane's Addiction, and much more. And they soon attracted attention from a number of major record labels, and they were then signed to Interscope Records in 1991. Their platinum 91 album was called Sailing the Seas of Cheese, which is probably my favorite album of theirs. And Sailing the Seas of Cheese, what does that mean? Well, apparently it was a term that they used to describe any corny thing that a band does in hopes of gaining wider acceptance, which I thought, that's a really unique phrase of which I've never heard before. So they coined that themselves, Sailing the Seas of Cheese. I get it. It just clicked right now. Like, I understand. Like, cheese, cheesiness, corniness. I totally get that. I'm gonna use that now. Thank you, Primus. That's fantastic. The album was supported by the singles Jerry Was a Race Car Driver and Tommy the Cat, both of which appeared on MTV. I think these two are probably their biggest songs, their most popular songs, along with a couple of others, but I think these two in particular are probably their most well-known. And I think if you're a new fan to Primus, you've never heard them before, those two songs specifically, you gotta listen to, because I think they're the most palatable for any normie person that isn't familiar with the kind of funk metal genre. But to be fair, Primus has a very unique sound all on their own. Like, again, they kind of merged like comedy into it with their funny wordplay and how they create this very cartoonish, almost animated-like world with their lyrics, all thanks to Les Claypool. And then, of course, the sound is fantastic. The funky bass that just takes you on a ride. So those two songs, though, if you have not listened to Primus before, I would highly listen to those two songs because you'll get a really good taste for what Primus is like. And yet again, I think that's kind of the gateway to then discovering Primus deeper if you like those two songs. So now with a major label behind them, Sailing the Seas of Cheese went gold. The band then toured in support with Rush, U2, Anthrax, Public Enemy, and Fishbone. They're being on tour with Rush, their number one influence, which is, I think, a really nice kind of well-rounded full circle moment. Weirdly enough, though, they ended up on Daytona Beach playing MTV Spring Break the same year as Mr. Big, Right Said Fred, and Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch, which is a funny lineup because you have them. And then you have Primus doing like, Jerry was a race car driver. I don't know. I think that's really funny. Primus was very notorious for turning down a lot of events that they just did not deem as something cool that they wanted to do. They didn't want to sell their souls, essentially. Les would recant this. He would say, "My manager said, look, guys, you keep passing on stuff all the time. The label's going to stop supporting you. We never did in stores, hated doing in stores, never went to in stores and signed shit. On the way down there, I just got pissed. So me and Larry ate acid. And when you were watching us on that thing, everything I saw was just orange. It was just bright orange. And I remember talking to Pauly Shore and he's all, hey, buddy. And I was like, what the hell is going on here?" That was his reaction to playing Daytona Beach, MTV Spring Break, which, oh boy. The Pauly Shore mentioned there and that just, wow. Yeah, that makes me feel really old now. I like that. Honestly, I like how Les Claypool talks. He talks as if he's like in a comedy. I don't know. He has main character energy. Do you know what I'm saying? Like the way that he speaks, it's just very wild and imaginative, up in the air. Larry LaLonde recants that, "I wasn't on acid, thank God. We done that on the beach there in the sun and then had to fly back to Poughkeepsie, New York in a blizzard. Three aborted landings with the plane flying sideways. If I was on acid, probably my brain would have exploded. It was so terrifying." As we merge into the mid-90s, Primus was on the front lines, landing on the top 10 of the Billboard album charts with 1993's album Pork Soda, and then they would headline the third Lollapalooza show. In 1995, Primus released their fourth album called Tales from the Punch Bowl, and it contained Primus's most successful single to date, which is the Grammy-nominated song Winona's Big Brown Beaver. Now, like I said, you know, Primus is known for their funny wordplay, so that was a double entendre on purpose. The single would be a massive hit from the album. MTV did love the music video, which was the band in these weird, like, cowboy masks and outfits and things. It's a trip. A lot of music videos from the 90s were trips all on its own. MTV did like the music video, but due to them having to censor the song for very obvious reasons that I think one can understand, it resorted to the music video and the song being played late at night, which is fine, but it doesn't lend for a lot of people to really watch the video and listen to the song if it's only late at night, you know what I'm saying? Because I think more mainstream distribution and a lot of their listeners would be listening to it in the midday or maybe in the morning or something. But at night, well, you know, only a specific kind of crowd would be up at that time. Unfortunately, their drummer Tim would eventually leave Primus in 1996, and they tried to soldier on when they got a new drummer on board, but this kind of sparked the beginning of the end, at least in terms of Les Claypool and what he thought of the band, because he thought that, you know, with the three guys of them that they were, it was like a marriage. And he said that it was a marriage that just slowly decayed to an end. So, you know, he didn't want to be in Primus anymore if Tim, who was an amazing drummer, wasn't going to be there. And also, he kind of was slowly starting to not be interested in doing the music anymore. What sparked this whole thing with me wanting to talk about Primus in the first place was the fact that in 1996, when they got their new drummer on board, Primus were asked by the makers of the highly popular adult cartoon show South Park to compose the theme song for the show. I'm sure everyone in their family knows the South Park TV show cartoon. The theme song is a Primus song, essentially. So if you like the theme song for South Park, which is done by Primus, then you will like Primus's music, because that's the kind of stuff that you will get. It's funny, it's a bit crazy, it's a bit wacky, like that's Primus in a nutshell, basically. I thought that was so cool, like Primus did the theme song for South Park. I love the time in the 90s, the 2000s, when actual musicians and bands that you knew about created theme songs for TV shows. Nowadays, you don't have that, but I miss that so much. It's so nostalgic. So I like that Primus were asked to compose the theme song for South Park. I like that. And it's still here to this day. They've never changed the theme song. They never will change the theme song because Primus reigns supreme. By the end of the decade, 1999, Primus would end up touring with bands like Korn, Limp Bizkit, and Deftones. Les Claypool would say this of this time. He said, "A lot of these bands ended up touring with us. I always joke that we were the leapfrog band because you open for Primus and you become huge. I remember Interscope Records really wanting us to do Family Values and Ozfest. And I was just not super comfortable in those worlds. I mean, we did them and we made a lot of great friends from them, but it just didn't feel like we fit." So with that kind of notion in mind, they would end up releasing their final album of the decade called Antipop. And this featured production and guest appearances from the likes of James Hetfield from Metallica, Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine, Matt Stone, who's one of the creators of South Park, Stuart Copeland of The Police, Jim Martin of Faith No More, and Fred Durst of Limp Bizkit. So this is a very stacked album, and I think this was quite a way to go out, you know, absolutely. So, you know, after this album released, by the turn of the millennium, the year 2000, you know, Les really had absolutely no desire to keep playing for Primus. He was done, really. He would always say in interviews that he would keep doing music until it wasn't fun for him anymore. And he just says, you know, it just wasn't fun anymore. He said this, "The 90s was an unhappy Primus camp. I hit a creative stagnation that wasn't helping us forward. And the personal elements, it just was time to stop. And I had been asked for many years, how long can Primus go on for? And I always said, I'll do it until it's not fun anymore. And it just wasn't fun anymore on many levels." The band took a hiatus from 2000 to 2003. And some point in 2003, the band would reunite. And since then, they've been making a lot of albums, one of which really stands out to me, where Primus did the whole entire soundtrack of in their type of crazy weird way to the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory soundtrack. I don't know if I'm really mentally prepared to listen to that album. I don't think I'm their target audience for that. But that's the kind of music that they're putting out, along with like regular sounding Primus albums. They did, however, kind of have a little bit of a return to form at some point, because when they came back from hiatus, they did kind of different things. But, you know, later on down the road, they did end up coming back together somewhat. So that, in a nutshell, essentially, is the story of Primus and how they came together and how they were friends with Metallica and how Les Claypool almost was in Metallica. The crazy antics that befell the band. I just thought this was a really fun episode to do. So, hey, I hope that you guys enjoyed it. And like I say, I'm not the biggest Primus fan because their music is very eclectic and very different. I can appreciate it for the weird craziness that it is. But again, if you have not listened to Primus, I would check them out. You know, check out their top songs on Spotify, see what you like. You know, listen to Jerry Was a Race Car Driver and listen to Tommy the Cat, My Name is Mud, Winona's Big Round Beaver, a bunch of other songs that they've done. They're really worth a listen. If you like the South Park theme song, which everyone and their mother knows, you're gonna like Primus at some point in some way. So give them a listen, because, you know, the immense sheer talent that Les Claypool really has in his fingers and in his voice and in his ability to write songs that transport you into another dimension, I think is unlike anything that I've ever seen from anybody. He's one of the best bassists that we have in the game, so we really got to give it up to him. He's really over here doing some things that not a lot of people have done before or even since Les Claypool. Not a lot of people can really copy what he's doing. That is essentially the story of Primus. I hope that you guys enjoyed and that you learned something today that you hadn't known about before. And I will see you guys next Wednesday with another episode of On The Mix. I'll talk to you guys later. Bye, guys.